anyone.
Welcome to the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast. I'm your host and half-brother of Big Dick Johnson, Daniel Hummer. I'm here with our other brother, Doug.
Yo.
I'm here with our favorite sound man, Eric.
What's up?
And a good friend of the show, Stevie.
Hello.
How's everyone doing tonight?
Good.
Good.
Pretty good.
I'm excited about the show.
Me too. So we got WCW Starrcade 1996. We're going to be doing the show retrospective today, and there's going to be a lot to get into and pick apart and deep dive. But first, we'll pass it over to Doug with the plugs.
Yeah, the only plugs I don't have are hair plugs.
Plugs?
Upstairs. Remember?
No.
All right. Eric does. So listen to Bobby.
Wait, what?
Never mind. I'll tell you later, sweetheart. Listen to Boxman and Smart, the Dirt Sheet Dudes, every Wednesday, Friday night, mixler.com/dirtsheetdudes. They can be found on all major podcast platforms. So you'll catch them right after wrestling, about 10:15, 10:20 is Eastern time on Wednesday and Friday nights. I believe they're going to be on tonight. I don't really expect them to be on at all next week because next week is Christmas week. And are we the only ones stupid enough to do a show on Christmas? Okay.
Wait, are we doing a show on Christmas?
We're doing a Patreon thing.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a Patreon thing, but we'll talk about that, you know, off air.
Okay.
Oh, all right. And then listen to us. Friday night, 6:30 p.m. Eastern time, here for the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast, blogtalkradio.com/everythingunscripted. Next Friday, obviously, there will not be a Unscripted Wrestling Podcast. It'll probably be moved, maybe Saturday?
Maybe.
But the next episode of the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast is actually going to be a retrospective. For those of you that don't know, Tiny Zeus Lister passed away. Zeus, of course, the villain from the No Holds Barred movie.
Okay.
Passed away last week. We're not going to do a retrospective on him because that'll take 10 minutes. But we are going to do, there was a special cage match on December the 27th, 1989, or that's when it aired. It was actually a pay-per-view. It was actually on pay-per-view. They aired No Holds Barred the movie, then the match. Well, that match can be found on the network on Super Tape Volume 1. So, Unscripted Wrestling Podcast, we are actually going to do, for the first time ever, a review of that home videotape.
Okay.
It's not necessarily a pay-per-view. It's a match compilation, but still, so it's something different. So we'll be doing that. Sunday, 5 p.m. Eastern time, same channel, blogtalkradio.com/everythingunscripted, will be Daniel's Controlled Chaos. And Daniel, tell us about it.
We're going to be doing a perspective. We're going to be doing a retrospective on the Scream franchise. So we're going to be talking about the four horror movies, Scream movies, and the TV show. And we're going to be kind of picking that apart and getting into that.
Who's the we?
Me and my sister. What's the point of having you do plugs?
Shit.
I never said that. You just don't do it.
Okay. All right. Listen to that. Then on Now, Tuesday night, 6 p.m. Eastern time, the NFL Hard Hits podcast. Eric Klineth and I, provided I'm on a device that works, or it might even just be me. We will be reviewing week 15, previewing week 16. Then, of course, obviously, you can also catch us on patreon.com/EU podcast. We got some stuff up there already. Tracy Smothers Tribute Show with Rod Bryce and Sam Houston. We did a WCW
feud
or something, right? Or for the Patreon?
Yeah, we did.
Okay. We got that up there. We also have the first episode of Doug's History Lesson that we did on Harley.
That just dropped today.
Okay. Really? Today?
Yeah. I mean, he sent it. I forgot to do it yesterday. So.
Okay.
Oh, we got to get to the show now.
All right. But the next one is in the next Doug's History Lesson, which will drop on Patreon, which will be probably next week, is going to be on Batista. All right, go ahead.
All right, guys. WCW Starrcade 1996. Starrcade around behind the event. I know Eric Bischoff has said differently lately, but I've always seen Starrcade as WCW's WrestleMania.
Well, that's what Dusty wrote. Well, no, Starrcade came before WrestleMania, but Starrcade was always supposed to be the NWA, then WCW's like big event.
Yeah, we had about 9,000 people in attendance
in Nashville, which is the third year in a row that they did it in Nashville
in the auditorium. WCW was starting to kill it by this time, right?
Yeah. They were already starting to win in the ratings.
Right. So they're doing what they're doing very well. They made 113,000 in ticket sales. The pay-per-view got a buy rate of 0.95, which is about 380,000 buys. So this did well.
Yeah.
Money-wise. Definitely the marquee is Roddy Piper and Hogan. But there's a lot more to get into here. Is there any other background you want to put on the event, Doug, before we get started?
So this is technically the first Starrcade with the NWO, okay?
It is.
And here's the thing. WCW has always been known, has been known for like the last year to kind of rely on not necessarily the younger talent, but the big name stars, and it was around this time, they did the thing where they took Sting out of the ring and they just had him hanging out on the rafters. Macho Man was off TV because I believe he was actually getting injuries fixed. And so they brought in Roddy Piper. They brought up Roddy Piper in Halloween Havoc 1996. So they started teasing this match, and around then, and then they made it for Starrcade because they wanted to do something to... Because Starrcade, for like the last few years, since before... The last Starrcade with a meaningful main event was Flair and Vader in 93.
Yeah.
Because then in 94, you had Hulk Hogan versus The Butcher. You had WCW versus New Japan in the World Cup in 95.
Yeah.
So now you have to get back to Starrcade being the big name event. Eric Bischoff had sided with the NWO, which nobody should really be surprised by that because, well, if you go back and watch it now, it's clear as day.
Yeah.
Because, Bischoff would miss Nitro appearances or whatever. They did a thing where there was a limo parked outside, and Sting and Luger opened up the limo, and somebody threw a Turner briefcase at him. obviously it was Bischoff in the limo.
Yeah.
And then there was a thing where Savage was trying to stay, focused for his world title match against Hollywood Hogan at Halloween Havoc. And Bischoff comes up and says, Randy, you need to watch this. And they got Savage's head all screwed up. So it's just like you knew that Bischoff was a no good bastard. So, so he's aligned with them. They did the thing to where, like, he was trying to keep Piper away from.
Why wasn't he here, though, at the pay-per-view?
Bischoff?
Yeah.
He was running the show.
But he wasn't on screen, though.
Right, which was. Because, all right, so the role that Bischoff took, basically, Bischoff wanted more camera time. Because the role of the money man was just supposed to be Ted DiBiase.
Yeah.
Wasn't supposed to be anybody else. Was supposed to be Ted DiBiase. But then Bischoff came in, because DiBiase was going to be the mouthpiece.
Yeah.
But then Bischoff comes in, and Bischoff proves that he can run his mouth. Why he wasn't on camera, I don't know. I mean, I'm not complaining about it because.
It's kind of weird he wasn't here for this.
Right. Because, this is before Bischoff started making all the rulings and throwing everything around, basically, when he was. How do you say it? When he started, reversing decisions and all that shit. Because, Piper beating Hogan, Bischoff could have easily come out and reversed the decision. So, it didn't happen.
All right, let's get into the first match. You got a title unification match for the J Crown and the WCW Cruiserweight Championship. Ultimo Dragon with Sonny Ono at his side against Dean Malenko. This almost went 20 minutes. Longest match on the card. Steve, what do you
Well, this was rather an excellent match. More importantly, with a hot crowd, these two put on a fine match.
Yeah, I agree. Eric, what are your thoughts on this one?
You couldn't put on a better opening match for one of their biggest pay-per-views of the year. This is it was an excellent match. Both guys are legends in the sport, and I think both are underrated.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Ultimate Dragon is one of my favorite Japanese wrestlers of all time. Dean Malenko is obviously one of the greatest in-ring technicians of all time. And those two, yep. I mean, it's conflicting styles, and it's also what both men do best. It did not feel too long. It was exciting. It was, to me, in this pay-per-view was paced very well. From what I think, this is a classic WCW well-done pay-per-view, because you got the cruiserweights in the beginning, you got some hot matches, and then you got the big, big stuff at the end.
Right.
So,
yep.
And this match, like you said, Eric, phenomenal start. And these guys, worked their asses off. And Ultimate was the heel and he won, it was still exciting, and it still got a pop, too.
Here's the thing. Dragon technically, yes, was the heel.
Yeah.
But here's what made him a heel. Sonny Ono basically made him the heel, because Sonny Ono was this annoying little guy. He's a Japanese equivalent of Jimmy Hart. He's a cyst on your butt. Okay?
Discount Fuji.
Pretty much. Fuji was at least entertaining. This guy was just annoying. So, I mean, because Dean Malenko really wasn't a babyface. Dean Malenko, like, in 96, 97, he was basically, he was the ultimate tweener.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not a baby face, not a heel. People respected him. It's like, if you really look at it, like nowadays, especially on like the NXT roster, nobody knows who the fuck's a babyface and who the fuck's a heel.
Yeah.
Right.
Because they're all working like,
yeah.
Like, all right. I'll use as an example Finn Balor. He worked as a heel back in February when he took on Johnny Gargano at TakeOver Portland. And he continued to kind of be a heel.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden he gets attacked by Damian Priest. He's a babyface now. And then Damian Priest is the heel in that feud in June. And then in August, during the North American title ladder match, he's a babyface.
Yeah.
So they're all going in between.
Yeah, the lines are blurred.
Which is how it is here. So, but for two guys that, you know, nobody knew who the babyface was, nobody knew who the heel was, Nashville just liked wrestling.
And good wrestling.
And good wrestling. And that's what this was.
Definitely.
So, and back in these days, like, it was very typical to start off with a cruiserweight title match. I think because that's what they did. Like, you start off with the cruiserweight match, and it gets the crowd hot. But these are two guys, like, Malenko likes to stay on the ground, you know. Dragon, you know, will stay on the ground, but he'll also go in the air.
This is Ultimate Dragon at his peak. And maybe Malenko around his peak.
Malenko was still peaking around this time. Malenko's peak really didn't stop until I think he started cooling off at the end of 97. He kind of picked up a little bit more steam in 98, but he lost a lot of steam at the end of 97.
Right. I have a question. Go ahead.
I heard there was there some connection with him and Bruce Lee? Wasn't there?
With Dragon and Bruce Lee?
Yeah. I mean, they mentioned it on Aaron. I mean, I heard he was like, I don't know if it was just part of the story or what.
I'm not sure.
Ultimate Dragon, I think, was a name of a series of movies done by Bruce Lee.
Okay.
And I think where Dragon took his name.
Yeah, it was part that he was the last student taught by Bruce Lee. That was his gimmick.
Okay.
I think they did mention it.
I wasn't sure.
Yeah, that was part of his backstory, but he really doesn't have any.
Yeah, I mean, he grew up in Japan, but he spent a lot more time in Mexico.
Okay. I thought I would ask. Thank you, guys.
Yeah.
You're welcome. How many stars would you give this, Eric?
Out of 10, right?
Yeah, I guess we did 10 now.
I'll give it an 8.
Okay. Stevie?
I'm probably going to give it a 7.
Okay.
I'll give it a 9.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm gonna go 8 too. Cause this was really decent, great cruiserweight action. I have seen better from both though.
Right.
But they just cause both guys are so phenomenal. But this was really good.
It was.
All right. Next match we have the finale of the women's championship tournament. Akira Hokuto with Sonny Ono and Kensuke Sasaki.
Not so good. Suki Sasaki.
Yeah, it's close enough.
Close enough.
Yeah. So, Hokuto defeated Medusa. Alundra Blaze, also a lot of people know her as, for the inaugural WCW Women's Championship. How long did that title last, Doug?
I was going to ask that.
June, I think, of 97.
So it was a year.
Wow.
6 months.
Why short-lived?
They didn't really care much. Or it's not that they really cared much about the women's division. It's just that, like, they only really had it for Medusa anyway. Right, but Medusa never held the belt. Here's the thing, and if she listens to this show, one, find something else better to do with your time, and two, I'm sorry if I offend her. Medusa, pretty much, when she got, they brought her into WCW because WWF back in 1995 realized, you know, they wanted to kind of do away with their women's division, so they got rid of her. Well, because she had friends in WCW and her and Bischoff got along, she went there. But they really had nothing for her to do.
Who, Medusa?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
he was like China before China.
He created this title for her, but to be honest with you, Medusa's always been such a pain in the ass that I think it just got to the point where nobody really wanted to deal with her.
There's a word I want to use, but I'm not going to use it.
We're rated R.
He was a bitch. There you go.
Really?
I've
said on this show, and he thinks bitch is crossing a line.
What'd you think of the match, Doug?
It sucked.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I've always thought Medusa was overrated. Okay. I've got nothing against Akira Hokuto. But, no, Medusa to me was just bleh.
She was all right looking.
Not looking. In the ring. In the ring,
yeah.
Just blah. Like, her work was just, I mean, I know
yeah,
she was,
her work was blah.
She may have been tough and all that, but in the ring, she did nothing for me.
Eric, what did you think of the match?
I agree with Doug. It didn't drop me off my feet or anything. It was blah.
Stevie?
Well, back then, WCW's venture into the women's division was a bit odd. Having, you know, signed Medusa prior from her WWE departure. And you all know what she did with the belt, like on Nitro. So she didn't really have the best competition in WCW.
No, she didn't.
Okay, but what did you think of the match?
What did I think of the match? I thought the match was okay. I wouldn't say good.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the only female that can really get a good match out of Medusa is Bo Nakano.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Either Bo Nakano or, Luna could get stuff out of her.
Yeah. And Akira Hokuto was not that bad. I mean, the athleticism was okay. Like, it was all right. It's just, the disadvantage of being in the middle of two really good matches.
Right.
You know, two really good matches with four legends, you know. So I think this was kind of the pee break.
Pretty much.
By what you guys are saying, I assume that the rankings aren't going to be very high. I'll start with you, Stevie. What would you give this out of 10?
I'd have to give it a 3.
Understood. Eric?
I'll be a little nicer. I'll give it a 5.
All right. Dougie?
I'm going to be a little meaner. I'm going to give it a 1.
one. Right. I think I'm going to go about, I'll probably go a four. It didn't do anything for me. It wasn't, I'm indifferent on it. I didn't, it was a 7-minute women's championship match on WCW. Obviously.
Exactly.
They never ran forward with the women's division. So this just kind of seems like a failed experiment.
Yeah.
Moving on. Jushin Thunder Liger versus Rey Mysterio. They go about 15 minutes. I'll get your thoughts first, Eric. What did you think of this one?
Another phenomenal match. Another two great legends. This is a young Rey Mysterio. He looked absolutely great in this match against a legend, Thunder. I think they both did great.
Yeah. Stevie, how about you?
Rey Mysterio is just excellent sometimes where he dominates matches, but he doesn't sell enough, and the whole thing becomes a bit of a circus show.
Okay. So, weren't really feeling this one?
No, I wasn't really feeling it.
Okay. Ducky?
All right, so Ray was, Ray, you know, 7 years into the business, right?
Yeah.
Ray is only 21 years old at this point.
21.
Wow.
Thunder Liger is coming off of brain surgery. Okay?
Yeah.
To remove in his brain. With that being said, this was actually, I think the finish of the match was kind of goofed up because you could see, like, Ray actually got his shoulder up at the end of the Liger bomb, so that kind of botched the finish a little bit. But I thought the match was pretty good.
Yeah. For these two, I can see why this hasn't been brought up as much. Not that it was bad. I thought it was really good. But I would put the opening bout probably above this.
Yeah.
And just because when you think of these two guys, you think of a classic.
Right.
Just because these are two of the greatest junior heavyweights of all time.
Right.
So
yep.
When you look back as a fan, you would think this is probably one of the best matches ever. It's a great match, but it's not it's not a 5-star, or it's not a 10-star match.
No.
I'm going to say it's a 7-star match. I thought it was really good. I do agree with Stevie's point to a point as well, to where the selling, you did get a little luchador crazy with these matches.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, well, they're supposed to be car crashes.
Yeah. I understand the old school mentality, too. And, not everyone likes their wrestling that way.
Right. And here's the thing. And, this was before, this is when they were still trying out, the cruiserweights. You had Malenko, you had Mysterio, who were already there and established. Dragon was obviously going to be more established. Psychosis was there. Super Calo was there.
Liger's the most established at all.
Yeah, Liger. But Liger was only making special appearances.
Yeah, but he's a Japanese legend.
Right. He's a Japanese legend, but again, he's only making special appearances because he's under contract in New Japan. Liger didn't want to live in the States. Okay? So he would only come in, he'd be like, all right, is it a big payday? And he'd be like, yeah. Okay, well, I'll be there. Other than that, and then, you had these other guys that were just starting to come in, but they were brought in basically to wow the crowd with their high-flying moves.
Yeah. But it is still really good wrestling.
Yeah.
I mean, you might not. I mean, me and Eric probably enjoy this stuff more because this is kind of what we're into, especially Eric's an AEW fan.
Right.
So
yep.
We probably appreciate the flying around in the theatrics a little more.
Some of these cruiserweights I did like. I like Ray.
I like all the cruiserweights. Except for a couple.
there's a few of them. You know, I liked Ray. I liked Dragon. Malenko was really good. I mean, not one of the high flying cruiserweights, but I liked Psychosis. I liked Super Callo. Parker was goofy looking, but I liked him. I liked Hoobie. I think the only one I really didn't like because I just thought he was a boob was Silver King.
Yeah, Silver King.
I mean, and I still kind of liked him, but he was basically a Mexican gigolo.
And IKEA sucked too.
Prince IKEA?
Yeah.
Oh no, he was fucking awful.
But yeah, these guys were great. I do think that these two could do better though. But I do enjoy the match. I'll give it 7 stars. Stevie, what are you going to give this?
I'm probably going to end up giving it 7.
Okay. Eric?
Yeah, I'm giving it 7 too.
Doug? I know you're going to be different.
I'll give it 8.
Okay. All right, let's move on to a no DQ match. Jeff Jarrett and Chris Benoit with a woman at his side. Doug, we'll start with you.
All right, so this is around this time there was trouble in the Horsemen, right? Because this was actually around the time where Chris Benoit and woman, you know, Nancy, who was Nancy Sullivan at the time, she was married to Kevin Sullivan, it was starting to become more evident that the two of them were, you know, not just a storyline couple. And it was becoming more and more evident. Things were getting more and more personal between Benoit and Sullivan. But this match here was basically, they were trying to get, Jarrett wanted to desperately be part of the Horsemen. Okay? And, you know, the other members of the Horsemen didn't want him. I mean, he was basically told, Flair said, you know, you're a Horseman. You're Horseman material. The other Horsemen said, no. I mean, he's horse's ass material, but not Horseman material. And so that's why this match is going on. It was no disqualification. And it's in Nashville. This match. It was in Nashville, Tennessee, which is Jeff Jarrett's hometown. But the funny thing is that nobody gave a fuck about Jeff Jarrett.
Ugh.
And this match was, like, it picked up at the end with Arn DDTing Jarrett and then Kevin Sullivan coming out and hitting, you know, Benoit with the chair, and that's how Jarrett got the win. But, like, again, though, the main storyline in this was, you know, Benoit was alienating himself from the other Horsemen because, you know, he was fooling around with another man's wife. Yeah. That's the problem Arn Anderson had with him. Now, Steve McMichael technically was alienating himself from the Horsemen because his wife would never shut the fuck up. I mean, I swear. Like, I would not have blamed Gene Okerlund for if he ever wanted to punch her in the throat. Like, that bitch.
Who, Deborah?
Deborah. Yeah, oh my God, she was un-fucking bearable.
Yeah, she was.
I mean, yeah. And again, you know, I'm not going to say anything, you know, I don't want to say anything because, you know, she did go through a lot, obviously, with the whole thing with Steve Austin. But she had mellowed out. She had mellowed out, you know, by then. She wasn't an annoying on-screen character then with Austin. But there were actually times when I was a kid where I was just like, Mongo, please just turn on her and hit her with the fucking Halliburton. Like, just, oh, my God. Like, it'll make your ears bleed. It'll make it, her voice makes the ears bleed and the penises shrink. Like, you cannot get aroused by her voice. But anyway, as far as the match goes, the match was okay. These two guys, Benoit could do better.
Eric, what do you think?
I thought it was a decent match. I mean, the storyline was pretty good. I mean, I think one day we should do a deep dive on it, Doug, your history lesson. But another story for another day.
Yeah, quit plugging that shit.
I like the match. It was pretty decent for what it was.
Stevie, what do you think of this one?
Well, with this match, they snowballed it into a feud where Jarrett wanted to know where his endorsements were. And this match with Benoit involved was pretty predictably decent. These two are great wrestlers, but I think the ending could have been better. I mean, I think the match was okay, you know?
Yeah. I think it sucked.
I agree.
I mean, well, because you're not wrong. Because there was too much other shit involved.
Yeah.
And here's the funny thing. Again, the Horsemen didn't want to. And Arn Anderson came out and DDT.
Yes.
You didn't see Mongo. Here's the funny thing. I don't think Mongo ever met a Q on time, at least till later on. Because there were times where, like even a couple weeks beforehand when Arn Anderson was getting got beat by Kevin Sullivan on TV. Four members of the Dungeon of Doom came out to attack Arn. Mongo came out as soon as the match was over. And you know it's bad when Tony Schiavone's like, here comes Steve Mongo McMichael, but he should have been out here 5 minutes ago. When you're getting dissed first of all, getting dissed by Tony Schiavone now is funny. But because back then everybody thought Tony Schiavone was just a dumbass.
Poor guy.
He was supposed to be in his prime. It's just like, okay, you're being dissed by the lead announcer because you don't know how to hit your cue. Why are you here? So, like, there was too much going on really with, like, all these other sub-feuds to really give a fuck about this match.
Yeah. And to me, the in-ring action just didn't do it. It went too long. I enjoy Chris Benoit's work. Obviously, he's a person, totally different story. But Chris Benoit can go in the ring, and he can put out a good match with basically anybody. And Jeff Jarrett, like Stevie said, they're both great wrestlers. Jeff Jarrett's more than capable of putting out a good match. This did not click to me. It didn't connect. The story, it's okay, but it's not enough to really make me care. I just thought out of the this was just filler to me.
They didn't have their chemistry yet.
No, it's just this and the women's match were probably the most forgettable things on the card. With that being said, I don't think we've given it. I got everyone's opinion, right?
Yeah,
I'm gonna give this 2 stars because I was not a fan. What do you think, Steve?
I agree. I'm gonna give it a 2.
Okay, Eric.
I'll give it a 4.5.
Gotcha. Dougie?
3.
3 stars. So that tells you what we all thought about that. We're moving along here. Jeez.
Now, everybody be careful now that hands don't come up reaching. Hands don't come up through hell reaching for us.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I know.
I'm talking about hands. But anyway,
moving on,
please.
Probably the most surprising match on this card because I actually enjoyed
this. This match should have sucked. The funny thing is that with this match, with as big as these four guys are, Scott Hall was the only one that technically could work.
Yeah.
Now, Ming and Barbarian were good workers, but they had to have the right guys with them.
Yeah. So, the Outsiders, Kevin Nash and Scott Hall, with Six Pac, whatever the fuck you want to call them, Sean Waltman, by their side.
China's porn cult star?
Yeah, whatever.
Actually, no, that was more of a sex tape.
Yeah. We're talking about Jimmy Hart, right?
Yeah.
Okay. They beat the Faces of
Fear.
He
may have filmed it.
Yeah. The Faces of Fear, Ming and the Barbarian. This match, like I said, it was very surprising to me how good this actually was. Kevin Nash even looked good.
And it didn't. Here's the thing. 11 minutes and 52 seconds, it didn't drag.
No, it didn't.
It really didn't.
Yeah, no, it didn't drag whatsoever. I thought, I mean, Kevin Nash and the Barbarian were going at it, and it got me excited.
Here's the funny thing, and Kevin Nash even tells a story that, like, he hated working with those two guys because sometimes Ming would get a little too carried away.
Yeah.
And just start wailing at him. And Nash would actually have to shout at him in the middle of the match, "Easy!
Yeah.
Don't hurt me."
Yeah, Ming didn't give up. He was crazy, man.
Yeah.
And those two, the Barbarian took the majority of the ass whooping from the Outsiders.
Right, because Ming wasn't going to sell.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Ming didn't sell. Some of the punches.
He sold the Bulldog kind of from Scott Hall.
Yeah, a little.
Like, here's the thing. He sold the Bulldog from Scott Hall. Ming actually liked Hall and Nash, though.
Did he?
Well, I mean, kind of. It was just the way he worked. Like, Nash even said, he's just like, Ming and I were friends. But he would just get too carried away. It scared the shit out of me.
That's coming from Kevin Nash. Stevie, what's your opinions on this match?
Well, this was a weird one, working as heels. The Outsiders didn't really have anyone to rubble against. Still, the match was stiff, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah, it was definitely
stiff. It had to be with three of the four guys hitting as hard as they did, because, again, Scott Hall could work.
Yeah, he was a smooth worker, too.
Okay. But Nash liked to work stiff. Barbarian liked to work stiff. Ming liked to hit you so hard that your heart would stop for a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
Not a couple of seconds. Like, he would not be satisfied until you stopped breathing for at least 2 minutes. Then he'd hit you hard enough to aren't going again.
Yeah.
But this match, again, it should have sucked.
Yeah.
But it was actually entertaining to watch, especially when the two guys, like when either Ming or Nash would get into it, or Barbarian and Nash would get into it. But it was mostly Barbarian and Nash, because Nash wanted to stay the hell away from Ming.
And to the Barbarian's credit, he did do some decent selling in this match, too. He made the other guys look good.
He sold the powerbomb.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I really like this one. What'd you think?
I thought it was okay. I thought it was pretty good. It was better than I thought it would be.
Okay. All right.
I mean, here's the thing. They did work, like, on Nitro a couple weeks beforehand, and Ming and Barbarian barely got any shots in, right? Because they had to use that as a selling point where more guys were going to join the NWO. And Ming and Barbarian showed here that they could work. The thing that I didn't like was the fact that, like, they had to haul their Nash down a couple of times, but every time they hit a big move, it would take them like six to eight seconds for them to actually go down for a pin.
Yeah.
Like, they were actually making themselves look stupid. But
wow.
this was actually more entertaining. This was actually the fact that we're going to say that this was better than Jeff Jarrett and Chris Benoit.
It's way better. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. But it shouldn't have been. This match should have sucked. We should be giving this match a 2.
Well,
but
I'm not going to give.
Well, it's not worth a 2. This match should have been worth a 2, but it's not. It was actually better than what anybody could have expected.
Yeah, it was. I'm going to give it a solid 6, because I can't go higher than a 7, because I can't do that to Liger and Mysterio, because that was a good match. That was a really good match. I'll give this a 6 because for what it was very decent. I'll actually bump that up to a 7. I'll say it's a 7 because this was a very entertaining match. It wasn't a classic, but it didn't have to be. It was a good. It was a nice tag team match. I liked it. Eric,
yeah.
What do you got?
I got 6.5.
Okay. Stevie?
Oh, go with a 7.
All right. Dougie.
I'm going to go with a 7 just because, again, this was a lot better than it should have been and a lot better than I think anybody thought it would be. And you know who could take a lesson from this match? As somebody that, like, could technically hurt somebody, but actually, even though, like, they're stiff, they also knew how to protect people. The fat bitch on Raw, Nia Jax. You know, Ming liked to hurt people too, but he never did because he was professional, you fat bitch. Take a lesson.
Sizes and misogynistics in the same sentence. There you go.
Yeah.
Moving on. Hopefully we don't get taken off the air. Eddie Guerrero versus...
As long as we keep paying the monthly fee, I think we'll be fine.
Eddie Guerrero and DDP. This is the finale of the tournament for the United States Championship. Stevie, what's your opinion on this one?
Well, if you look at it, these two have had better matches, but this was another solid outing for Guerrero. His ability to get himself over hasn't really been supplemented, but significant. So...
Right.
And plus, if you his levels of storytelling, I mean, I thought it was good.
Right. Well, this one's a difficult one too because this isn't peak either of these guys yet, because this is still heel DDP. So this isn't where DDP becomes the people's champion yet. It's close.
Right.
But DDP's still a heel. Eddie Guerrero doesn't quite have that machismo yet. So you got two legends that aren't really there yet, in my point of view.
But this was probably, I mean, of the three matches that they had, you know, this year, or in the year 1996, this was probably their better one.
You think so?
Yeah.
I might actually disagree, but... I
thought their Halloween Havoc match sucked. I mean, the Clash one was okay, but...
I don't know. To me, there was kind of a disconnect here. I didn't not like it. I fell asleep during it. I had to rewatch it. It was okay. You know, it's not my favorite match on this card, but it's not mind-numbingly bad either, like Jared and Benoit. But for these two guys, it's just another one, and it's hard because you look at all these match listings, and it's like, wow, this should be really good. And a lot of them are good, but you expect a little more, I guess.
Yeah.
I expect a little more from these two.
I mean, and again, though, too, this was more of a, like, a lot of it also revolved around the NWO because, you know, Scott Hall was the one that hit Dallas Page with the outsider edge to kind of cost him the match because he wouldn't necessarily join the NWO. Thank God for mute buttons. But, I mean, I thought it was a decent match. Like I said, I think it was the best one that they had.
Eric, what did you think of this one?
I liked it. I mean, you could tell DDP was already over with the crowd. I mean, it seemed like he was the babyface. The crowd loved him. And this is just the peak of being over. I like that.
All right, how many stars would you give it?
I'll give it 6.5 too.
Okay, Stevie.
I'm probably gonna give it a 6.
Dougie.
I'll give it a 7.
I'm gonna have to go a 5. Thought it was mediocre, but so let's move on. This is probably going to be a shorter episode, but that's all right. Lex Luger and the Giant. Dougie, go ahead.
Probably, if not my favorite match on the show, my second favorite. This match, I think, was a lot better. Again, going back to, you know, Faces of Fear and the Outsiders.
I don't think this should have sucked. I mean, these are
These are
two
guys. Well, Giant was still learning how to work. Giant was still learning because if you really think about it, up to this point, a lot of Giant's matches, a lot of Giant's matches, especially on television, were supposed to be only like 30 seconds because it's a choke slam and then he's done.
Yep.
But, you know, he was still learning how to work. And everybody was still trying to get used to Luger being a babyface. I absolutely love this match.
I thought it was decent. I mean, the storyline with the matches was intriguing. So, started with Sting coming in later on, talking to both guys, and then with the bat and the referee, Nick Patrick, finally turning that heel and doing the NWO officially. So I liked it. It was a good match for what it was.
Right. Stevie?
Well, the Giant back then dominated most of his matches. So I think it was a good match.
I have to agree. I really like this one. You do see that the Giant's a little green.
Yeah.
And you can tell. But the crowd was excited. Luger actually, watching old Lex Luger matches make me really like him. I feel like he gets so much hate for no reason. I know we've talked about it, but he could work. And this was really good. Especially the Giant kind of tossing him around, Luger bringing it back to him. I like the spot they did when he was pushing him to the corner, but Luger just kept pushing back.
And here's the thing. Luger knew how to sell.
Yeah, he did.
All right, and I do agree. I never really understood the Lex Luger hate. I mean, I understand why he gets flagged for certain things. His work, he could sell, and he could, you know, he was a decent worker. So I don't think he should get criticized for his work. His outside activities, yes. Not his work.
Especially this. I thought everything was good here. Maybe even like the Nick Patrick stuff and it was a little hokey in the fucky finish, but that's WCW. And I still think it worked.
It still worked. Mm-hmm. I mean, seeing him go halfway across the ring after Sting just gave him one little nudge with the baseball bat was,
yeah.
I mean, funny. Just watching him just floppy. He's like, dude. Gave you a little nudge with the baseball bat. All you had to do was trip.
In the one spot where he had, I know Big Show's done this a lot, but when he had him pinned and then he kind of like bench pressed him, Luger got serious air on that one.
Yeah.
And he flew on the referee.
He flew on the referee, and I'm sure Mark Curtis, you know, Brian Hildebrand, Mark Curtis, was just like, when they told him, they're like, all right, he's going to do this spot, you're going to get knocked out. And Brian Hildebrand's just like, eh.
Probably. It was very smooth. It was very smooth the way it happened, but it was. I really like this match. I tossed it to everybody, right?
Stevie, give his opinion?
Yeah. Okay. Stevie, how many stars would you give this one?
I'm probably going to give it a 7.
I'm going to have to agree with you about 7 on this one, too. Dougie?
I'm going to give it an 8.
Okay. Eric?
I'm going to give it a 7.
All righty. Now, moving on to the main event, why we're all here, or at least why everybody in Nashville came. The Battle of the Icons, Icon versus Icon.
Everybody in Nashville came here?
They came to
that's not really what we're supposed to be doing. We're supposed to be social distancing. I mean, even you and I are too close, right?
Well, Icon versus Icon. Even though this happened like a million times before this too, but they acted like it was it's still special. But Roddy Piper and Hollywood Hogan, probably the best match they had in WCW.
Let me just say this.
No, let me say that he was joined to the ring by Ted DiBiase and Miss Elizabeth.
Okay.
And Vincent.
But this was the first time that this match happened one-on-one in like 11 years.
Yeah. But it still happened a lot when it happened.
It happened a lot between 85 and 80, between like 84 and 85, yeah.
Yeah. This match, yes, not both guys are the best workers, but the intensity of this match was amazing. The pops were amazing.
Yeah.
Peter's promo with Mean Gene earlier in the night was absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
Hogan, you know, this was built up really well, and this had the big fight feel to it.
Right.
Yeah,
I think at the time, both guys, like, they liked each other, but they also, like, they had that professional rivalry.
Yeah.
To where it's just like, I mean, and here's the thing, like, I would say that, like, both guys had enough respect for each other to where they would give each other, you know, the best they had.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the Super Bowl 7 match sucked, and then the Halloween Havoc 97 match sucked. So it's just like, okay, well, why was this great and those two suck? And a lot of people say, well, it's because, you know, it's because of Hogan. No, it's also because these guys were old. All right. You've seen the movie Grudge Match, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So this almost kind of had, like, you can almost compare this match to, like, you know, the Stallone-De Niro thing. Because, you know, those two guys were old, but they gave it everything they had.
Yeah.
But this should have just been a one-off.
Yeah.
It should have just been a one-off because this would have been a perfect way to end the rivalry.
Should this have been for the title? Should you have given Piper the title at Starrcade? And then maybe have him drop it a couple weeks later or something. But just for the moment.
For the moment, yes. And then have him drop it. Okay, so fantasy booking here, right?
Yeah.
Even though this isn't the Fantasy Warfare show. You have him win it here. Then on the next night on Nitro, you give the Giant his title shot that he had earned at World War III.
Yeah.
And you have the NWO help Giant win it. And then as they look to, you know, then they'll go to the Giant and be like, all right, dude, you got to hand the belt back to Hogan. No. And then that's when they turn on him. And then he has the match with Hogan. Hogan gets the belt back, obviously, if he has to. But, like, you could do something like that.
Yeah.
Or even let Piper keep it to the sold-out pay-per-view, have Giant beat him there, and then...
Yeah. To me, that's the only thing that kills this a little bit, is that it should have been for the title, because it started.
Yeah.
It's your biggest show, huge match. Make it for the title. But everything else in this match, I absolutely loved. The sleeper hold at the end, even some of the interference was okay. The intensity between the two was great. Eric, what was your opinion?
I'm going to disagree a little bit. I don't think it needed to be for the title. I mean, Piper didn't need the title. This had a big fight feel to it already. The Michael Buffer introducing them, promos, everything leading up to it. I think it already had that big fight feel. It would have been great if it was for the title and he won. But I necessarily don't think it killed it, but that's just my opinion. So I just wanted to be a little different.
No, that's fine.
And Roddy Piper, though, he's one of those guys that I don't think ever really needed a title.
It just feels weird because it's like if you had WrestleMania and you had Roman versus Rock this year, but it's not for the title.
And Roman's the champion?
Yeah. It feels like a cop-out so Piper can beat Hogan, but Hogan doesn't have to lose the belt. It feels selfish. At least for the fans. I don't know the background of it. I don't know why they chose to do that. But the fact that this
I don't
was...
think Piper wanted it to be for the... Like, I'm trying to remember because they did it. I don't think they did a... Bischoff did a show on this, but I know they did an episode on Piper.
Yeah.
And I think it was more... Piper just said, it doesn't need to be for the title. and they were going to do a series of matches between the two, and Piper just wanted to win the first one.
Yeah.
Because they did want to have Hogan obviously beat him in the end.
Stevie, what's your opinion on this?
You know, I think the buildup over the previous weeks had the crowd at a fever pitch. You know what I mean? But I think the match was good, in my opinion.
All right. How many stars would you give it, Steve?
Well, I'm going to have to probably give it a 6.
All right. Dougie?
I'm going to give it an 8.
Eric?
I'm going to give it an 8 because it could be fight feel pretty good.
I got sucked into the hype on this one a little bit. I'm going to give it a 9. I thought this was the best match on the card. I know it does not have the best technical ability on the card, but there's something about just watching it. I got sucked in watching it, even again today with you and Doug.
Yeah,
I did too. That
feel really gets you. When it's done right, the big fight feel can really hype you up on a match, and it did for this one.
And here's the thing. When you have announcers, they give a damn.
Yeah. Say what you want about Dusty's commentary, but him, Heenan, and Schiavone made this show special and this match special.
They made this match special. Yeah. Luger, the Giant, they gave a lot of credibility to.
Yeah.
Obviously, they gave a lot of credibility to the Cruiserweight match.
Yeah.
Even, you know, the Outsiders and, you know, Ming and the Barbarian.
Yeah.
They gave credibility to the matches. And, like, Bobby Heenan basically, because let's face it, Bobby Heenan's been beaten up by both Hogan and Piper.
Yeah.
He never really had much love for either one of them. Even like in the buildup towards the match, Bobby Heenan, like when Piper first came in, he'd be like, look, he goes, I know Piper. I've managed guys to go against Piper. Piper himself has beaten me up. So I know how dangerous this man is. And so does Hogan. That's why Hogan doesn't want anything to do with him. So, and then when Piper slapped the sleeper on Hogan, Bobby's just like, good night, Irene.
I like what Schiavone said, too, when he was like, he's going to rip all his hair off his head. And then he was like, that shouldn't be a hard job.
I don't care how shitty they say Bobby Heenan's commentary in WCW was. He was so funny.
I thought his commentary was great. All right, guys, let's do our final thoughts, and then we'll get out of here. Dougie, I'm going to start with you. What are your final thoughts on this show, and then give the show a rating?
Okay. My final thoughts are they showed that the NWO had some kind of vulnerability. Okay. By having Piper go over, by having Luger go over, by having Scott Hall take a tail kicking, and it actually looked like Scott Hall actually got knocked out by that nerve hole that Barb had on him.
Yeah.
Which, you know, when you have hands that are that big on your neck or on your pressure points, like you are more than likely going out. But this show as a whole, some good spots, some bad spots. Three things this show could have done without. The women's title match, because to be honest with you, the WCW women's division really did nothing for anybody.
Yeah.
Could have done without Jarrett and McMichael. Jarrett and Benoit. I mean, could have done without the McMichaels. They're useless. Even though I like Mongo. The only thing I like about his wife at the time were her bongos. They weren't necessarily that big, though, back then. Not till she got into WWE. But could have done without the women's title match. Could have done without Jarrett and Benoit. Put Benoit in something against somebody from the dungeon. Okay. Other than that, I thought the show was very good. And Piper getting the win. Piper could have just rode off into the... Oh, my. Anyway. Piper could have just rode off into the sunset and everything would have been great. This should have just been a one-off. My rating would be a 7 out of 10.
Eric, final thoughts.
I really like this pay-per-view. I mean, I think this was one of the best pay-per-views that we had to watch. As Doug said, it could have done without two matches, the Benoit match and the women's match. I agree with that. Other than that, all the other matches were better than average to me. So I really enjoyed it from start to finish, besides those two matches. I'll give it a 9.
Okay. Stevie, final thoughts on your rating?
I thought it was a good match. I thought it was a good pay-per-view. I thought it was a good pay-per-view. So I'll probably give it probably an 8.
All right. I thought this was really good. I thought out of a lot of the Starcades, top to bottom, this was solid. There was a little filler, but not too much. I thought it was paced very well, like I said at the beginning of the show. I really enjoyed this, and the ending was very sweet and very special and a nice, heartfelt ending. So I'm going to give this pay-per-view an 8. That's just the way it goes. Starcade 1996. Does anyone else have anything else to touch on before we head home here?
Just a little bit about the next night on Nitro. Just real quick.
Okay, go. Yeah.
Obviously, the next night on Nitro, the Giant got kicked out of the NWO because he dropped the ball. They did that, and then there was other, the biggest thing that happened on that night, Daniel and I are actually watching that now, and I'm finding out the reasons why I've never actually watched this episode of Nitro before.
Is Greg Valentine time?
I was going to watch it myself.
Yeah, trust me, Eric, it's probably an hour and 45 minutes of your life you might not be able to get back. It's got nothing to do with Greg Valentine. Greg Valentine... Roseanne Barr is in better shape than Greg Valentine is at that time. And she was huge in 97. It was a good pay-per-view. It was probably the best Starcade they had in a couple of years. Since the 93 one.
You think it was better in 93?
No, I still think 93 was better, but I think this was the best one they had since 93.
All right, guys. That was Starcade 1996. Eric, Stevie, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
No problem. Can I go home now?
Yeah. We'll see you guys next week. We're going to decide the day for when we do the... Whatever the hell we're doing, the tape.
Super tape.
Which
is actually, here's the funny part. It's going to be exclusive matches that were taped at certain live events and tapings. Also coupled with obviously the match from the match that they taped for that special on December the 27th, that aired on December 27th, 1989. We'll also talk about some of the vignettes they aired on that show. Some of the behind the scenes stuff, when they did a profile on the Bushwhackers.
Right.
So that's a lot of time. It's going to be kind of a first time ever thing that we go behind the scenes of a home video. But back in those days, The WWF made a lot of money off those home videos.
Oh, I'm sure.
But yeah, so that'll be something. I'm looking forward to that because that's going to be fun.
And on that note, we will see
now
you.
Now, that's
next.
Not going to be on the Patreon, right? That the one that's going to be on the Patreon?
It's going to be our regular show. We just don't know when we're doing it yet because we don't want to work on Christmas.
Okay. Cool.
All right. Later, guys.
Later.
Bye.